You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hey everyone, welcome and Merry Christmas. So, what's going on? Well, we did a Christmas movie, as you can see, Muppet Christmas Carol, a classic to round out this month, and I wanted to make sure it was able to be seen on Christmas. That being said, of course, I know some of you, A, don't really get this time off, and B, have to travel, so we thought we'd bring a little bit of the holidays to you. And also, I know a lot of podcasts go on vacation this time of year, but we figured it'd be nice, because some people, hey, still have to work and travel, so they would like something to listen to. And this is a nice heartwarming episode in which we break into song. So there you go. In the new year, we've got a lot of exciting stuff, including a movies that disappointed us month. I guess that's kind of all of our months, but this one in particular are disappointing sequels. I want to say thanks for a great 2018, because we will have one more episode at the end. But I just want to say that our numbers went through the roof. People came out to see me at Cineprov. So all in all, a great time. Thanks, guys. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, happy new year, and I'll talk to you again in 2019.
There's magic in the air this evening, magic in the air. The world is at her best, you know, when people love and care. The promise of excitement is one the night will keep. After all, there's only one more sleep till Christmas.
Haven't been listening to the Revcast? Here's what you're missing.
The sharks have an economy based on gold?
Apparently.
You have a shark like decked out like Mr. T with the bling all over it.
Oh, now I want to see that. I want somebody to draw a picture of a shark with a mohawk. I pity the fool.
I'm done.
The Revcast by RevolutionSF.com. Available at RevolutionSF.com, iTunes, and part of the ESO Network.
There's no such thing as strangers when a stranger says hello. And everyone is family. We're having so much fun. After all, there's only one more sleep till Christmas.
The Marleys were dead to begin with.
Welcome to my Happy Defender Childhood. This week, the Marleys were dead to begin with. We watched the prequel to Happy Time Murders. This is Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Defenders of Childhood, and award-winning comedian. And on panel we have...
author of The Thing in the Woods, Matthew W. Quinn.
Hello, this is Daniel, and I like haunting billionaires.
And...
I'm Thomas Herman, host of the Geekly Oddcast.
Merry Christmas, everyone. This is our Christmas episode of Season 5, which means we've been doing it for 4.5 years. God help us all.
God help us, everyone.
Said his psychiatrist last of all. And joy to the Xanax. So this time around, we're doing an honest-to-God Christmas movie, which we haven't done in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And how better to finish the month that Thomas suggested than having him finally f***ing show up.
Well, one of them you did while I was out of town, and well, I didn't have a chance to watch Labyrinth, not in time.
That's fine. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess theoretically this is where we talk about the plot, but it's Christmas Carol.
It's a Christmas Carol. If you don't know the Christmas Carol, so I can't help you.
There's this guy who's mean, and he's haunted by 3 ghosts to make him less mean.
And well, this, and this all the 5 ghosts.
That's right, because there's, well...
Well, you could really get off on the counting.
So, we can start at the beginning. All the Whos down in Whoville liked Christmas a lot. But the kind who lived just north of Whoville simply did not. That's not bad.
Was that your...
What the dickens are you up to?
Scrooge hated Christmas a lot for reasons which we'll get into throughout the movie.
He almost got laid once, apparently.
Was that your Boris Karloff earlier?
It was turning into Michael Caine. Ooh, it was my Michael Caine.
Okay.
But at this point in his career, Michael Caine is a little bit angrier and a little sharper, so he's down here.
Well, Michael Caine had already won an Oscar by this point, and here he was shilling for the Muppets.
To be fair, he does think this is one of his favorite movies.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Yeah,
big
time. He does such a good job in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, he's the star. And it's
he's
funny.
He's the definitive Scrooge for me.
And Picard came out with one 2 years later, and you're like, it's still Michael Caine.
Oh, I remember when Picard was Scrooge.
So, I mean, let's start at the very beginning. We have something that I think a lot of these movies actually need, but it's the Muppets, so they do it without thinking, which is a narrator. And the narrator is omnipresent, and they have to explain what omniscient means, which is awesome. And it's Gonzo and Rizzo, of course.
The great thing is that Gonzo, as Charles Dickens, can use actual quotes from the Christmas Carol novel.
Right. The Marleys were dead to begin with. I can't do a good
Gonzo. That's how the story begins, Rizzo. The Marleys were dead to begin with.
Oh, that you lost it at the end there. You're okay.
It's close. Some sort of Patreon reward where people can get clips of your doing impressions because you are excellent.
You do realize you've said that in like 3 of the last 6 episodes.
Yes, because he's that good.
Oh, it's good. That's cute. You're such a flirt.
I don't know. I don't know who to be more insulted by.
Yeah.
As dead as a doornail.
Are my eyes rolling being picked up by the microphone? I'm not sure.
I'm insulted. Good
no, I'm
sir.
Talking more towards Matt than anything. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I mean, first of all, all of us have our strengths and our very obvious weaknesses, so we can work with that to begin with. However, but Rizzo's response, which is great, he goes, really? That's how it starts?
And
he goes,
that is how it starts.
He goes, yeah, that's how it starts. He goes, it's kind of creepy and spooky. And, ooh, like, yeah. This movie does a good job of showing what this is, which is it's a ghost story, right?
Yeah.
Like, it is not Christmas. I've watched this a million times. This is one I've seen 1,000 times.
I remember seeing this in theaters back in the day when it was it was released in 1992, I think.
Yeah.
I saw it in theaters as well.
I saw it in theaters.
This is one of like the first 3 movies that I can remember actually seeing in theaters.
This and Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I wasn't allowed to see Jurassic
Park. Both Jim
Park.
Henson Muppets.
Exactly.
Instead of Jurassic Park, I had to see Once Upon a Forest instead.
That existed? What the hell is Once Upon a Forest?
Oh, it was... We'll get into that, I'm sure. Stay tuned.
Worse than Ferngully.
Ooh, yes.
Ferngully...
Oh, wow, that's a bar.
I mean, but Ferngully at least had Tim Curry in it.
And Robin Williams.
As the anthropomorphization of pollution, if I recall correctly.
Sexy pollution.
I mean, how could you not?
Once Upon a Forest had Michael Crawford in it. That was their star power.
Who?
The original Phantom and the Phantom of the Opera on Broadway.
So is it a musical?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's why you get Michael Crawford.
Oh, my goodness. I know what you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah, okay, yeah. Good. I feel justified.
Sing, you'll live with me one night, one lifetime. Yeah, him.
Yeah, okay. Him.
Okay.
Masquerade.
Yes. He sings through his nose and ears somehow.
He sings through his ears, Jesus.
He's excellent, but he does. He's... So speaking of, this is also a musical, which the Muppets should do more of, and it's one of the things we didn't like about Muppets in Space, if I recall correctly.
Well, because that was all funk music. I mean,
well, but it was also diegetic music, right? Where they would just listen to Funky Town or whatever. This is the Muppets singing, which is awesome.
Same guy who wrote Rainbow Connection wrote all these songs.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. That's actually
Well, that's what you need, right? Like this is a heartwarming tale. So we start out with the Marleys were dead to begin with, and then we start out with
that's how the story begins, Rizzo. The Marleys were dead to begin with.
You get that one more time because you've done it 3 times already.
Oh, sorry.
You're fine. Then we start with the introduction of...
Was that last one the best one? I feel like that was the best one.
As far as studio notes go, I'd say it was the best one. You need to sound more like you've been smoking your entire life.
Ooh.
It's kind of the Gonzo thing.
That's difficult.
So let's talk about the movie, shall we?
Yes, let's.
A whole musical number about how much of a prick Scrooge is.
Yeah.
When a cold wind blows, it chills you to the bone.
And there's nothing...
And then we have a Monty Python character who shows up. And there's nothing in nature that freezes your heart like years of being alone.
It kills you with indifference like a lady paints with rouge.
And the worst of the worst,
the most hated and cursed,
is the one that we call Scrooge.
Oh,
there goes Mr. Humbug. There goes Mr. Grimm.
If they gave a prize for being mean,
the winner would be him.
Old Scrooge, he loves his money because he thinks it gives him power.
If he became a flavor, you could bet he would be sour.
Even the vegetables don't like him.
I think we got that. That's
We can't do that for every song, but that was kind of the best thing we've done so far. So yeah, and then he's just walking down the street. I will say right away, first of all, this is why the Muppet movies are the best. That we there's no it's all practical effects. There's no CGI. There's a skosh later that we'll talk about, but
yeah, penguins. I think it'd be one of the big ones I could really call out.
And the Ghost of Christmas Present.
Well, they're layered. They were. I think it was the way they layered the scene.
Well, yeah. It was green screened, right, with the penguins.
Yeah.
Well, and I was thinking of the Ghost of Christmas Past.
Past. Yeah.
She looks creepy.
That was green screened too. Apparently, they floated a puppet in water and did her green screen.
Well, yeah, but that's where it looks the roughest, because you can see there's like weird ripples and stuff that just don't make sense.
It makes sense because that's, I mean, what ghosts are supposed to look like. I mean, they're supposed to look otherworldly and creepy.
Fair. It doesn't fit in with any of the rest of the Muppets or characters.
Okay.
Yeah, especially mm-hmm. the Ghost of Christmas Present and the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come were puppets.
Well, she was a puppet too. But she's like this weird porcelain-faced thing, and none of them, all the rest of them have felt faces.
Right? Yeah.
Anyway, so we get the intro, we get Cousin Fred, you know the movie, right?
Right.
Cousin Fred is a character actor who never works again, apparently, but he's charming, he's fine.
Bob Cratchit.
Kermit is Bob Cratchit, which I think this is the first time he's not been the lead character in a Muppet movie.
That's about right. And then it happens again almost every movie after this. Well, yeah. That's not true. It happens with The Muppets, where he's not the main character.
Well, it happens with The Muppets. Muppet Treasure Island, he's not the main character.
Oh, right.
And
he comes up later. He's
Muppets from Space, he's not the main character.
And I think it's because this is the first one after Jim dies.
Yeah. Rolf doesn't talk, even though he shows up, which I think was a conscious decision on the filmmaker's part.
Yeah, I mean, Rolf was... Jim's favorite character to work with, but it was the hardest one to work with. But.
Right, because like when they did it, it was up on a platform, if I recall, and it's just his arms above slamming the keys because it's all prop. Like, and in fact, it's a synthesized keyboard, which isn't plugged in, because the hollow body has to be there so he can put his physical body underneath. But this is also Brian. I mean, my joke is accurate. Brian Henson, they don't let touch a lot. And he directs this movie, which, frankly, is kind of a great movie.
Oh yeah.
This is
my pinnacle of the Christmas Carol movie. Like,
yeah,
it's my Christmas tradition. Yeah. This is the one I watch every year.
This made me tear up. I'm not sure when I should introduce
but Spirit, tell me there is something like he sells the f*** out of this movie.
Because he plays it. He plays it as if he like you know when you had. You know, Patrick Stewart take it on, 2 years later? Like, anybody who takes, and tries to put everything into it as the serious movie surrounded by felt-covered puppets.
Well, he said specifically that he would treat the character like he was doing it for the Royal Shakespeare Company, which is 100% accurate.
Yeah. Now, Royal Shakespeare doesn't usually make him sing for reasons, but he's actually fine in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned before, it's funny, not that he needs to defend this movie, but he brings it up a lot in interviews. He has done a musical. He has done
this. Oh, yeah. Whenever we ask, have you done a musical? Yeah, I did it with the Muppets.
And people like to dismiss Muppets as kid stuff, but I guess since 2010 or whenever that movie came out, that it establishes that it's not really. It's for everyone. It's why I hate, I mean, I know it's why you hate the term kids movie or family movie, because you can just make a good movie. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some of the Muppet movies really are just childish trash.
Well, it reminds me of whenever I'm at an MST3K panel at Dragon Con, where there's all bunch of 11-year-olds in there because their parents have introduced them to those characters.
Right, and it's just because it's not profane doesn't mean it's for kids, but it also doesn't mean it's inappropriate for kids either.
Right, right. I think Jonah at that same panel was talking about how this whole thing reminds him of a Weird Al concert for the same reason.
Yeah, and I mean, Brian Posehn is like, and my kid is in love with my favorite comedian, which is Weird Al, and it will always be Weird Al.
Yeah.
I just watched UHS for the first time, and I'm like, yeah, I get it. Jonah, by the way, what's his name?
Jonah Ray.
Yeah. His real name is Jonah Rodriguez, I think. Or Rodriguez, excuse me. But he goes by Jonah Ray. He has one of my favorite beer jokes of all time. He goes, my favorite kind of beer is a wheat beer, which is like saying your favorite kind of bread is cake.
That's pretty good.
I like Jonah Ray a lot. He's funny. He's a funny
wonderful.
Fucking guy. Anyway, so we're introduced to the idea of, well, I mean, it's the same story. Like, after
Scrooge dismisses everyone. He goes home that night, and it's a dark night. Gonzo shows back up on the back of a horse carriage and goes, now, it's worth mentioning here that his partner, Jacob and Robert Marley, you're like, wait a minute, has been dead for, you know, decades, but he didn't bother to change the sign because he's cheap. And that's the way Scrooge liked it.
Darkness was cheap, and Scrooge liked it.
That's where we get the doors from Labyrinth showing back up as a head comes out and screams at him.
Oh, that was an amazing bit where the door knocker was slowly transforming into, was that Statler's face?
It is Statler. And it's Robert, and he goes, Jacob Marley? And he goes, yeah! It's effective.
It was terrifying as a child. You're like,
yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, it's meant to be terrifying. It is. That's, yeah.
And you know, at this point, they start to, Rizzo's like, all right, how do you know what the hell's going on in there?
Well, I told you, I'm the narrator. I know everything.
All right, Mr. Omniscient Narrator, how do you know what's going on?
To conduct a proper search, Scrooge was forced to light the lamps.
How does he do that?
I do love that they maintain, because there's lines they could have obviously changed and did for the movie, but when he's talking with the Marleys and he's going back and forth and he tries to say that he thinks it's all just some hallucination, and he goes, there's more of gravy than of grave about you, and I love that line because that's
from Charles Dickens.
It's Dickens.
Well, it's Dickens, and then they start to harass his joke like they would like Stadler and Waldorf, because it's almost a Muppet line. Ah, there's more of a gravy than a grave about you. And he goes, no!
My personal favorite callback to Dickens was the fact that Scrooge worked at Fozziwig's Rubber Chicken Factory.
Fozziwig's.
Old Fozziwig's.
In the novel, it's Fezziwig.
Of course, but still.
That was a glorious shift.
Like, I mean, to the point where almost... You see him, like, you see Brian Henson at home with his feet up watching, like, Mr. Magoo's Christmas, and he's like, hey, Fezziwig sounds like Fozziwig. And he's like, let's scrape together some money and do this.
And Michael Caine totally devotes himself to it because he's so excited when he sees Fozziwig's Rubber Chicken Factory.
I mean, to be fair, though, if you told me that was the first scene they filmed, I'd believe it, because I imagine a lot of actors, the first time they're on stage with the Muppets, that's how they are. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, oh, he's out Fezziwig. And you're just like, it sure is, buddy.
I feel like if Caine hadn't gone full tilt for this, this movie would not be anywhere close to what it is.
Oh, yeah.
I agree. Like, if he'd been more like any of the other, because what's really interesting is typically the way a Muppet movie works, especially you get celebrities and all of that, is the celebrities exist to be upstaged by the Muppets. And this is a Muppet movie where the star is the person, is the celebrity, mm-hmm. who owns the role, and the Muppets are the supporting cast around. And it was a really interesting switch, because that's not how any Muppet movie prior to this runs. It was kind of a nice change.
Well, and he has to lead the story, right? Like, and that's why it's interesting, because in most Muppet movies, Kermit just, even if he is the protagonist, like in the Muppet movie, he's not on screen the whole time. Michael Caine has to be in every single scene, and they do a great job with it. And subsequently, you forget how little Kermit is actually in this movie, and he's not in it very much.
Well, he's Bob Cratchit, and Bob Cratchit's not really in
like
the
what,
Christmas
three or four
Carol
scenes.
Line. Yeah,
no. Yeah. And we get to him when we get to the ghosts. But so
speaking of the whole not intended for kids, did anybody notice the line about our assets are frozen?
Yeah, that's a good line.
This is my island in the sun. Oi, oi.
That's such a stupid joke. That's a really dumb joke.
Oh, I love
it. Sells
it. For an accountancy joke, it's quite entertaining.
No, the assets are frozen is good.
Yeah.
The island in the sun thing
that's
drives
a dumb
me nuts.
Joke, yeah.
But it's a Muppet joke.
It's a Muppet joke.
Right. Now, I will say Gonzo is also fantastic in this. Who does Gonzo? Is that Oz?
No, it's not Oz.
No, it's Goals.
Goals, yeah.
Yeah. Dave Goals.
It's Goals.
And he makes it work. I mean, honestly, like, because him and I guess it's Whitmire at this point, right? And Jerry Nelson and Frank Oz, of course, are in every scene because they have to be. Mm-hmm. But once you lose Jim, all the voices are different. Like, and that's the problem with, I guess, Whitmire. Now, Whitmire, his Kermit is, I mean, like you said, you do his, I could do Jim. But
it's just, it's so much, it's so broken. This is a...
Tiny Tim always loved the ducks on the river.
Yeah.
But you're just like,
yeah.
Oh, my heart, my soul.
Well, the thing is like, you have that, you have your Henson, you have your Whitmire, and then you have the crime against humanity, who is the current voice of Kermit.
It's just so soulless.
The current voice of Kermit?
The current voice of Kermit.
Oh, the current.
The current voice of Kermit is a crime against humanity because at least Whitmire was close. Like, yeah, it was different. It's not Henson's Kermit, but it's close. It's attempting to maintain the character. I don't know what the hell they're doing right now, but it's not Kermit.
Oh, well, there's a reason why it's off the air. There's just nothing. There's no soul to it.
No.
But anyway, first goes, of course, goes to Christmas Past.
Well, he meets Jacob and Robert Marley, and they do a musical number. Yeah.
Marley and Marley?
Yeah,
which is great. Avarice and Greed. It's one of the better songs.
Avarice and Greed.
I will say one of the things I did enjoy learning about this scene was to really get that glowing effect the way they did it, they were using like black lights and to get kind of the glowness of it. But to hide the strings, because on blacklight, those strings glow.
Right.
They had to cover it in sunscreen.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. So they would just cover it in sunscreen because you wouldn't see anything because the blacklight, the UV wouldn't bounce. It wouldn't give you any bounce. It was great.
Yeah, that's nice. That's a stupid, like, that's wonderful.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, that's really funny. Well, if you're hiding a crime scene, now you know how to do it.
The more you know.
Yeah, all right. This is nothing if not an the E is for education next to the podcast. The 30,000 people who've listened have learned something. That's what we're up to.
There we go.
So
can I get out of my part of the Christmas Carol part that I love here is he's bargaining with the ghosts. He's bargaining with the angel. Can I meet all the ghosts at once and get it over with all at once?
When the bell tolls, what? Well, that's from the novel.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. That's the Christmas Carol part I like. Yeah. That to show character development, he's bargaining with. With forces he doesn't understand. It's like saying, like when Cartman is like, well, what if I got probed, like now? it's so fantastic.
And the comparison between Eric Cartman and Ebenezer Scrooge is probably more poignant than you intended.
Well, I mean, has he done? I'm sure they've done A Christmas Carol. I can't be bothered to watch that show anymore, but I'm sure they've done it.
It's been interesting this season. The last two episodes have been good, but other than that, nah.
We'll see. Now, of course, you don't even have to tell us what it is because it doesn't matter when this episode comes out. That argument will be made by Twitter.
Pretty much.
Hashtag cancel South Park will just say, thanks, buddy, and they'll keep tweeting you every week.
Yeah, it kind of needs to end at this point.
It sure does. So does everything that's lasted this long. We found out that SpongeBob's been on the air for 20 years now.
I know. It depresses me. Yeah.
I will say, though, they're only 10 seasons in.
Live long enough to become the villain.
Like SpongeBob. Well, he killed 12.
South Park's been trying to make up the fact that it was the villain for so many years.
Yeah, they're trying to apologize, which is unnecessary because no one gives a shit. I'm sorry, we don't. Moving on.
How are they the villain? We'll go leave that alone.
The Ghost of Christmas Past is a creepy child made out of porcelain that takes us through his past. It's the longest of the remaining five-act structure.
But the past has always been the longest one because it's the one that really...
Reminds
us who he is and why he's broken.
Right.
And then, but it also kind of breaks him.
Right. We start in a British boarding school where he doesn't even go for Christmas because his unseen parents are apparently awful and he is an unloved child who wants to study. Right? I mean,
yeah, that's the book.
Pretty much.
Yeah. He had a brother.
He tells himself he wants to study.
Well, there's that great.
That's the thing. He does have a brother because obviously that's, you know, his nephew at the beginning.
Right. I think it's his sister.
Was it sister?
Sister. I remember seeing a version of this where his sister comes and takes him home from school. I could swear it was in this movie, but watch it and it's not.
They replaced the sister with Sam the Eagle.
Yes.
That's how they did that.
It's the British way, which is a great... There's a great joke there. It's the American way. Because it's Sam, who looks like Warren G. Harding. Yeah, he goes, Sam. And he goes, it's the British way. And then he looks around for who the hell told him that, which is a great gag.
I kind of like the pan over that they do with all the busts on that shelf.
It's like it's Socrates, Moliere,
Dante,
and then Charles Dickens. And it's, but it's still Gonzo. So Eat it up, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, yeah.
And they have the good joke, which is he saw his schoolhouse age and decay.
Yeah.
The nose falls off Socrates, and then the shelf collapses on Gonzo, which is great.
I've been meaning to fix that shelf.
Of course, headmaster. That kid is really soulless and creepy.
It's the American way.
Yeah,
the yes, headmaster.
The kid who plays Child Ebenezer looks like Damien from Children of the Corn. Yes, yeah. Yes, headmaster.
Wait. Damien from Children of the Corn. Damien,
oh, Damien
from
the
Omen.
Excuse me. He did that crossover bit where he took the belt from Isaac.
Isaac is the one from Children of the Corn. Oh,
Outlander. Outlander, we have your movie.
There you go, Matt. There you go.
So in the past, we see Scrooge's past, basically, where he's apprenticed to Fozzie and then he meets Belle.
And he's talking to Fozzie, you know, sir, you know how much this Christmas party is costing the company?
But
God, it almost turned into Kermit.
Oh my God.
I did.
You just,
but I can't. Do you have a Fozzie?
You started to see the what's going to
no,
come.
No, like, you know what? Fozzie's a hard one.
Fozzie's a hard one.
Yeah.
That, but he goes,
even
but
if he means perfectly innocently, you know, sir, I'm trying to protect the company.
Right.
But
oh, screw. No, sorry. I can't.
No, but he goes, Christmas is a time of generosity. And he doesn't have an answer because he doesn't understand human emotion.
Right.
Scrooge is a skosh autistic.
Oh, and this is where Animal and Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem come up, too, because they're the house band at Fozziwig's Christmas party.
And you see young versions of Statler and Waldorf, which I've never seen before.
Yeah, which is Marley and Marley, because they'd never been made before. They were made
short.
For this one.
It was quick. It was great.
loved it. No.
My personal favorite line was, it's a tradition for me to make a little speech, and it's a tradition for us to take a little nap. No.
Your Stadler's not bad.
That's not bad at all.
The young Stadler. Just desiccate him. Break him just 20% more and add like a skosh of crow and you have old Stadler.
I'm so glad to get these notes.
I know. I'm just such a prick. I'm sorry, guys.
Oh, no.
But yeah, and then he meets Belle. Then we cut to a scene 5 years later. Mm-hmm. They're going to get engaged, but business is bad, so he doesn't want to get married.
This is the scene that's cut from like Netflix and the Blu-ray and a whole bunch of stuff. Belle
Even
has
my DVD.
Yeah.
I got it on my DVD.
It's on my DVD on the B-side.
Yeah.
Like, there's two versions on the DVD I have, and if you select the correct version...
Yeah.
And was it in the theatrical?
No, it wasn't. It was on the VHS.
It was in the first release. It was in the first release.
And I watched that song on YouTube, and at least part of it, and it's supposed to be sad, but she looks like she's gloating that she's breaking up with him.
Yeah, the emotion, I think, is wrong.
I disagree. I disagree that she's gloating.
She's almost snarling.
I don't.
Well, I could also see why she's
ugly.
Pissed at this point.
Yeah, so, she's supposed to be pissed at him.
Yeah.
She's
heartbroken and pissed.
I admit she's not the best singer, but at the same time, for what the scene is, it's very emotionally effective.
Well, the lyric,
love is gone.
It carries with us. So, and the one thing that I really is interesting about the musical number is Scrooge knows the words, and it's the only time that a song is acknowledged as something that's happening, which you usually don't acknowledge in a musical, right?
In a musical, it's like almost like everything pauses, and this is what's running through people's heads.
Right.
Yeah.
But old Scrooge is mouthing the lyrics as she's singing it as though... Scrooge's performance there is crushing because you can see it as the moment that he realizes his life becomes what it is.
I thought the whole point of that bit was he was having the same thoughts that she had.
Right. Well, but still, like, he's seeing it from her perspective.
Well, I mean, you're not wrong that it's an acknowledgement that this is a musical number in a musical, which is weird, but at the same time, I thought it was effective because he's finally at an emotional point thanks to the ghost, where he can see it.
Well, I agree with you, but I'm also acknowledging it's something that only the Muppets would ever do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's right? A rule that they would break that no one else would think to
because
break.
Because the Muppets break the fourth wall in the first scene of this damn movie. Because it's literally Gonzo going, I am Charles Dickens. Wait a minute. You're a...
There's a mole on my wrist and a scar on my wrist. I got that when I fell off a bike.
And onward and upward.
Onward and upward.
I don't know if that was a good Gonzo. I'd probably need Nick's notes.
You're fine there, buddy. All right. But I mean, it's just, it's effective because he sits down on this, like on the kind of handrail on this bridge and starts to weep. And then the next cut is him weeping in his bed. And you're just like, holy shit, they killed this old man. Like,
yeah.
It's the scene where you're supposed to have an affection for Scrooge because he realizes he's broken. Mm-hmm. And then the next scene is my favorite, which is the Ghost of Christmas Present, because he's just kind of me hosting a party. He's just big and forgetful and grabby.
And five drinks ahead of wherever you are.
He goes in and he's like, did I already say that? He goes, you did. Yes. Yeah. Well, come in and know me better, man. No.
And he's like leading Scrooge in a dance, and Scrooge is just grinning. This is the first time that man has felt joy in probably decades.
Ever.
Well, no, and that's the great part, because you broke him. Well, no, and this is the where it gets really twisted from the ghost perspective, because you have the Ghost of Christmas Present who shows him the joy of Christmas and all of this amazement. And then just when, like, you know, you've got Scrooge, like, happy on Christmas, it's so wonderful, yanks the rug back out from underneath him and goes, yes, but it's still fucked up and part of it's your fault.
It is all your fault. Like, because he's like, because, like, it's the boundless food. It's this ebullient, huge, joyful man who bear hugs him. He looks like Father Christmas in Britain. He's wearing the Advent wreath around his head.
Yep.
And he's like, well, let's see Christmas morning. And everyone's dancing and singing and joyful. And they're like, well, let's see the Cratchit house. And first thing is Miss Piggy curses him, which is awesome.
I was not eating the chestnuts, Belinda. I was testing them. It's a cooking thing.
And you have all the little spawn of Kermit and Piggy just floating around.
Oh, Bettina and Belinda and Rob.
That's certainly not kosher.
Yeah, right.
Well, I mean, his nephew Robin is Tiny Tim.
Well, and then there's another male frog that gets no name.
Yeah,
Peter and or something.
It is Peter.
Yeah, but
Peter, do not stop
Turning that spit. I'm going to see until your voice explodes. Your larynx is going to jump out of your goddamn chest.
It's going to be like Alien.
Bad male anatomy. /R. Regardless.
That is the way to cook a perfect Christmas goose.
It smells so good. I can't do a little
it
Kermit.
It does, doesn't it? It smells so good, Mother.
Jesus Christ, Kermit. Mm-hmm. Kermit's a chain smoker.
No, that's Peter. Peter discovered crack. He sounds like Lindsay Lohan now.
God bless us, everyone.
There you go.
Oh, and I'm about to raise your right out that.
We're not there yet.
We're not there yet.
So we have Kermit and Tiny Tim, and Scrooge realizes he had no idea he had a son, and then you're like,
or a family
or existed outside. It's like the way that little kids think teachers live at school, right? Like, it's like there's no cognizance of this old man.
Well, this is also the scene from the novel with Bob Cratchit doing the founder of the feast bit.
Yeah. Well, and I will say here, this is where...
Oh, Ebenezer Scrooge! Even though he is ugly and badly dressed!
I'm done.
This is where the Muppets shine.
Pretty well dressed. I thought he'd be kind of cheap and just dressed, maybe not in rags, but much more simply.
Who?
Scrooge.
Who? He's not.
Yeah, but he's like a big gold... I see like a big watch chain and stuff.
Well, I mean, he's wearing Victorian layers after layers because he's too cheap to buy the hay.
He may very well have also gotten that watch from the Marleys.
He robbed their corpse.
Yeah.
Well, we're not there yet because that's apparently a thing that happens.
Yes, they talk about it.
Yeah.
What I was going to say is the cool thing here is the Muppet scenery. Everything here works. They live in this house that looks like it's a proportionate house. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Michael Caine is squatting to stand outside, but it doesn't look like those... Something I hated about the Hobbit movies. It doesn't look like a Hobbit hole where it's all CGI and bullshit. This is actually... Everything is real, right? Like, there's Town of the Fire in the fireplace and the small wooden chairs. It looks like something you could reach out and touch. This movie has a weight to it, which in 1992 was starting to go away, frankly. Yeah. This movie, all the budget, like, and you see it in that first initial shot where they fly over the London that they've built. It looks great.
Yeah, it does.
Hello, London!
Goodbye, London!
Grinch. That's not a bad Rizzo screaming. That was I'll give good. Myself my notes. Good job, Nick. Someone's going to listen to this and smile kind of. They're going to be less nauseous than they were.
Myopia, well, now with 90% less nausea.
Ooh. That was good.
That was a burn.
That was good.
Well, after that, he sees that Tiny Tim's sick. He asks the ghost of Christmas present. What's going to happen to him? And
he quotes back at him.
Yeah, he goes, well, if he's going to die, he might as well do it and decrease the surplus population.
Which is a John Cleese line in retrospect.
Oh, yeah, it is.
It's
direct from the book.
It's something he said, yeah, earlier in the, yeah.
I know that, but as I was watching this, I could just picture John Cleese.
We forgot the best line. Oh, sorry. There's a scene where he goes, I want to see friends. Show me family. And he shows his nephew, Fred, and they're playing a game of 20 questions effective.
Yeah.
Yes or no? And he goes, I'm thinking of an unwanted, horrible creature, and it's Ebenezer Scrooge. And not only does everyone know who that is, but they all fucking hate him and think it's the best joke. And the Ghost of Christmas Present is like, oh, this is not going to help. This is not going to help.
We have to go now.
Yeah, let's go see some friends.
What would this movie have been like if John Cleese were Ebenezer Scrooge?
Not good.
Okay.
I love John Cleese, but you need someone who can play it straight. And the second I see Cleese, it's like Will Ferrell. Will Ferrell can play earnest, but it doesn't seem earnest. Stranger Than Fiction. Have you seen Stranger Than Fiction?
Oh, yeah.
Great movie. But even there, there's that edge of that smirk the entire movie. And I like the movie. That's the problem.
I just know they went through a couple people before they settled on Michael Caine. I know Peter O'Toole was one of them.
Fine. I mean,
yeah, I would have liked that.
I mean, I think I can't imagine anyone else other than Michael Caine, but I mean, same with Brendan Gleeson. Brendan Gleeson would have been fine, but he's a drunk Ebenezer Scrooge. If there ever
Ron
was.
Moody apparently was another one.
Not as good.
Yeah.
Not as good. But anyway, the end of Present, like you said, he goes, well, what happens to Tiny Tim? And he goes, that's the future. I'm not good at the future. But I see an empty chair and a cane without an owner, which is a blood-chilling line. Mm-hmm. And you see Scrooge going like, well, is this what happens next? And he goes, well, there's a buddy of mine coming.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. He's not as...
Oh, as he fades out to like a Star Trek teleport scene.
And he goes, go forth and know him better, man. And then he just giggles as he disappears into nothing. This is the end of his life.
Well, he said that at the start.
He says, I have 2,000, that goes like, what, almost 2,000 brothers before me, or something like that. Like,
well, yeah. And Scrooge's response is the kind of brooding miser, which is, think of the grocery bills, which is a joke, but it's just like, I'm thinking of the bills right now, and he's growing fully erect as he's thinking of money.
Does anybody else think that Richard Harris would have been hilarious? Is this
Richard Harris? Again, someone who would have sounded alcoholic the entire time. Oh, you tell me this is, oh my God, I'm doing Arthur.
Oh, God, Dudley Moore.
Dudley Moore. You're saying this is the ghost of my past. Oh, this is fantastic.
There's more of gravy than of gravy about you.
he's spilling his martini everywhere. Hey, ghost, are you the thing that will happen or the things that are... Oh, you know what? Let's just drink.
That was pretty good.
Why am I...
Thank you for the audition, ladies and gentlemen.
And he just laughs and walks away, drops his drawers and walks out. He already wore a top hat for a movie and a half. That's...
Are you somebody's father?
That's my Arthur line right there.
Oh, that's good. Oh, Christ. And then we have the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, which is one cruel bastard.
Oh, well, he's pretty much...
he's death.
Well, he's...
He's the Grim Reaper hauling around.
He is a darker death than Ingmar Bergman imagined.
Well, and it's great because it's clearly just a wireframe, so there's nothing in there. It's just a shadowy nothing. And something we haven't talked about, we talked about the songs, but the soundtrack as a whole is great. Like, as the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come just shows up, the whole soundtrack is... And it's just this whole plotting nothing, which... Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, they go to the junk cellar, and he's buying up the bits and pieces of Scrooge's former life after seeing the business associates saying, like, I'd only show up to his funeral if lunch was provided.
Before, you went over that scene. The first thing they see is that a group of pigs talking about whether or not they'd go to his funeral.
And, I mean, they are, like, quote-unquote capitalists out of, like, an old political cartoon. They're just like, we'd go if lunch was provided.
Well, they made a joke at the very beginning. He's like, that was a wonderful breakfast. What should we do now? Lunch.
Yeah.
Well, they look like Boss Tweed.
Yeah, basically. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's like I said, they're flat out of a political cartoon.
Yeah.
And then we cut to the junk seller, who's a giant tarantula man in an incredible act of puppetry.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're selling, like, the wool bed comforter.
Well, they sell some cufflinks, if I recall correctly, like some Mother of Pearl. Yeah.
And it goes, and his curtains, they're made of damask. Very cheap damask. But, I mean, the reason I say the puppets are good.
And his blankets, they're still warm.
The only warmth we ever had.
In a line delivered by Helena Bonham Carter. But the puppet takes it with one of the front legs and then passes it back to the other four legs.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, that's complex.
Really great scenes where, like, where you'd see Kermit just standing there on a set, like nothing holding him up. There's no obvious cutoff from the bottom so that you know that, you know, something. They did some really good scene work here to really just make the puppets come alive.
I put the kibosh on songs, but some of the songs, like It Feels Like Christmas. One point he's ice skating and stuff, and the direction of it looks great. That's where the penguins are. And the background behind the penguins doesn't look great, but the penguins skiing and then Gonzo with Rizzo on his back skiing looks fine.
Yeah.
I think that was a little earlier with Kermit singing.
The season, Jolly Enjoy, like that. That was the
and
first
then
song.
Kermit goes ice skating.
Yeah. But I mean, again, that stuff looks fine.
Oh, it does.
The puppetry is impressive.
The layering, as I said, like because they layered two scenes on top, like two shots on top of each other, like the penguin skating and Kermit and the crew watching. And because they were doing two separate things, like, because obviously trying to do all of that in one set would have been impossible.
Right.
And really, that's what you see is you see the layering because the lighting was just a skosh off.
Well, and something that reminded me of the old Storytellers TV show is the scene where they're cleaning up for Christmas and they're stacking the books and it's the rats. And there's like sometimes two or three rats on the stack of books. And that's cool. It looks very much out of something of the Muppet ride and MGM Studios, still, this is 92. This is before any of that crap.
Speaking of callbacks, wasn't that the dog from Fraggle Rock?
Oh, yeah, it was. That was the dog from Fraggle.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely the dog from Fraggle
Rock. I mean, and that's the thing that I love that they do in Muppet movies, which is that there's clearly some sort of warehouse somewhere with all of them, and just like, why doesn't Big Bird show up in the Muppet movie? Why not? Like, he's just there. I can't do a Big Bird, but he goes like, so where are you heading? He goes,
I'm going to New York City to be on public broadcast television.
And they're just like, in moving right along. And that's, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? I mean, I kind of half expected the old man to show up as one of the shop vendors because there are humans throughout this.
Yeah.
He just shook his fist at Kermit. I mean, why not? Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come is the heartbreaker. He's dead, clearly. No one cares.
He's the one that, because I think I always thought, like, you see, the Ghost of Christmas Past breaks him. Christmas Present, it basically brings him up and then drops him back down. And then the Ghost of Christmas Future puts the fear of God into Scrooge.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because you watch this, Jesus is never mentioned in a Christmas movie. God is never really mentioned in a Christmas movie. This is all about humanity. This is a very human story.
Well, they do talk about, you know, Jesus healing the sick in the Tiny Tim scene.
Well, in the scene after he dies, right? He goes, I thought it was... Well, he goes...
He talks about the priest. Yeah.
As gold and better. He said it was important for people to see him in church because he wanted to remember who was born on the day to make blind men walk.
Blind men walk. Yeah.
The lame walk and blind men see.
I was about to say, I think that was a Charles Dickens line, but then you botched it.
No, then I Muppeted it right up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they do. They mention him there. But like, it's not about Christmas, really. It's about the human spirit.
I will say, entertainingly, from a historical perspective,
Dickens wrote this?
Well, no. Dickens and Washington Irving are basically the reason why we celebrate Christmas the way we celebrate Christmas.
Right.
Today. Yeah, pretty much.
It was the one day people had off, so everyone would just get drunk and hurt each other.
Yeah.
It was not a celebrated holiday, really. No. It was a party holiday. And, yeah, so we celebrated because of that. But anyway, the last goes, Tiny Tim's dead. He's just dead.
Well, Tiny Tim's dead, Scrooge is dead, and he sees his own grave.
Well, and it's funny because it's a paradoxism, right? Because Scrooge is dead and everyone cares, but they're happy about it. And then this innocent, pure child that he runs into.
And only one family knows.
And no one cares.
Tiny Tim always like the ducks on the river.
And you're just like, oh my God.
That was a good read right there.
That was a good read, yeah.
And he goes, oh, spirit.
You're on your own, folks, for the last chapter. We'll see you at the finale.
Which is a good directorial decision.
I did enjoy this. Just get because the humor needs to be gone.
Yeah, you need
from all of it.
And he goes, oh, spirit, is there a Christmas that could bring such unhappiness? And then he wakes up to nothing. He wakes up to there being no God. Right? Because he's literally crying at the foot. Then they take him to his own grave. Ebenezer Scrooge. Oh, spirit. And he's tugging on the drapes that is death. And then he pulls down his own drapes and he's like, oh, this was all possibly a dream. Oh, back to being evil. And then it turns into a comedy.
Well, not back to being evil, though, because he wakes up.
No, but Nick's making a funny joke about what could have happened.
What could have happened? If it was Robot Chicken, that's what would have happened.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But at the end, it's a joke that I've made in my class
it
three times.
Well, would have been Skeletor doing the Christmas Carol thing if it was Robot Chicken.
It's true. At that point, he flings open. He goes, I'm as merry as a schoolboy, I'm as light as a feather. He flings open the shade and throws Gonzo across the stage because we've established in 1976, nothing is funnier than throwing a puppet.
This is true.
But he flings open the shutters and does something I do in class all the time.
Scrooge is saved. We don't have to worry about anything.
Except for the cancer that's growing in your throat, Gonzo. but he goes, the boy goes, hey, you there, boy, what's today? And he goes, today? Why, today is Christmas Day. I say that literally whenever someone asks me what today is. it makes me very unpopular. We're fine, boy. Though.
I love a teacher like you. I will say, entertainingly, from the book, that they don't really do much in the movies, and they may have briefly mentioned it, but they tend to skip it, which is, in the book, the Marley shows up and goes, for the next three nights, you're going to get visited by ghosts. And then he wakes up in the morning after dealing with all three ghosts, and it's the next day. And that's the realization. Mm. He goes, they did it all in one night. Of course they can. They're spirits. They can do whatever they want. And you're like, but they do that in a lot of the movies because they skip the whole it's going to come over 3 days.
Because it's not necessary.
It's not necessary, right. But it makes that line where, of course, like when they add that makes in, sense. It's like, why are you so surprised they did it in one night?
Aren't there also demons strapped to the Ghost of Christmas Present in the book?
Yes, there are.
It's like want and...
Well, no, that's like a future.
No, it's present because they notice like a claw that's coming out from under the Ghost of Christmas Present's robes, and it's like want and ignorance.
Yeah, want and ignorance. I do know that they... I know in Scrooged and in another one, like they opened up the future's cloak and you have... greed and
no like that was the whole thing that originally in the book was a callback to Scrooge because Scrooge asked when he saw these demons like, well, don't they have anywhere to go? And that's when Christmas Present said, well, aren't there any poorhouses and workhouses
and prisons
yeah.
At this point, we end up with the Michael Caine musical number with Joyful Heart.
Very much, yeah.
Oh yeah,
it's well, and again, and yeah. Well, yes, it's a joyful spirit and a joy.
We'll be nephew and nice to me.
Nephew and nice to me. And we love, hope, and peace to me.
Love, hope, and peace to me.
Anyway, and every night we'll end. And even if we start with a joy, fuck it.
It's wonderful. Like, you know, it's not even great singing, but he's having a blast.
And Gonzo and Rizzo are back.
And they dance through everything, through the old shops. He gives present to Fezziwig and to the teacher, whose name I forget.
He goes, he finds his nephew and, you know.
And they're baffled. This is where the other characters do a good job because he kisses the wife on the cheeks and he gives her a gift. And she's laughing, and he is gobsmacked. His jaw drops. And then they end up at Bob Cratchit's house. And this is where Piggy gets her line. And I don't know. It's
wonderful.
Well, no. And it turns into a perfect kind of crowded scene satire where everyone in the entire movie shows up in this tiny house, which also must have been a bitch to direct because you have 1,000 Muppets in nothing.
Yeah.
No, I can't imagine. Like, it's like, all right, humans, you must stand here. Because otherwise you're going to fall into a pit.
And you must stand still because we have to get everyone here and then cut it three different ways from Sunday.
It must have also been 1,000 degrees in that room.
Oh my God, I can't even imagine. I mean, actually, you can tell at points they do ADR. Mm-hmm. You have to here because the fans would have been impossibly loud because they're all wearing wool.
Oh God, yeah, all wearing wool. Yeah, well,
and stage lights.
So and Michael Caine's in a full overcoat and top hat.
So someone I'm actually working to try and get it on an interview for my podcast. She was at our wedding. Was actually the costume designer for the puppets.
Yeah.
For this movie. And it was, but I mean, I'm just sitting here like everything, every single piece, but yeah, all of it wool, all of it realistic. And you're just sitting here like just, and then all of these people with their hands up, wooled puppets and just like standing with their hands up the entire time. It must have been a nightmare.
Okay, well, so I have to ask, that's cool that that person was at your wedding, but I have to kind of ask, did they like say, oh, well, Miss Piggy was such a diva during this?
Yeah, right. I can't imagine because... I mean, I'm sure there's 1,000 Kermits and 1,000, I mean, now Robins, who I think is a useless character, but whatever, and Gonzos, and they just, these are the measurements. I'm sure there's like a blue book
of
the Muppet,
like,
measurements.
It's how they, like, I remember I saw there was a documentary once, and it was how they were making, they make Bert.
Yeah.
And it was like they use like a coffee can to get his neck because it's just the right dimensions. They have the coffee can set, and they just wrap it around and... That's how they get started because that's the exact... First of all, you'll know you can get a hand through it.
Right.
And yeah, mm-hmm. They've got a... I think it's just set and perfect. Now they know exactly what to do to recreate everything.
Well, and that's what it must be. Like, you don't even need a Kermit there. There's a standard measurement. Like, it's the children, junior, small, and it's just that's what Kermit wears. And the sets here, though, like when his son is on his shoulder and they're coming back from church.
Oh yeah,
it's not only a sweet scene, but the way they film it, it's.
Oh yeah,
it's, oh yeah,
you're
no,
right.
Where you can't because they're just
dum
going.
Dum da patita, dum da patita. It's the season to be Charlie and joyous. Fa la la.
That's how you do it. You go up an octave, but you hold your Adam's apple.
Oh, you too.
Yeah, but we've been here for a while. You want to wrap it up? I mean, we could talk about this all day,
but we're
longer than half the movie at this point.
That's a valid point.
So, Tommy H, what do you got?
I'm with you. I watch this movie at least once a year around Christmas. It's a definite tradition,
yeah.
And will be probably for the rest of my life. I love this movie. It is my favorite version of A Christmas Carol. Mm. It does a wonderful job. Because I've read the book as well, and it's a faithful adaptation.
Sure.
With the joy of the Muppets added, so it adds that flair that gives it, it's a little different, but it's still, the story, the essence is still there, and I love it for it.
Sure.
Surprisingly, this movie affected me more now than it did when I was a kid and first saw it in theaters way back in the day. It's such a touching movie that actually... kind of reboots the emotional impact that A Christmas Carol was always supposed to have. I mean, sure. By the time this got made, this was a cliched story, right? Like, everybody had ripped this off.
Flintstones.
The Flintstones, Mr. Magoo, everybody, yeah. I'm sure. Star Trek, H.R. Puffin
Scrooge
stuff.
Oh, my
That's
God.
That's an entertaining
though.
One, actually.
It's
oh,
so
yeah.
It's
That's actually, right.
When Pete shows up as Death, that was scary.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, it's so, like, to your point, it's shorthand at this point. Like, at one point, they do a Simpsons where there's just, they're like throwing in at the end because they don't have an end to the episode. So they just do the end scene and they're like, and Mo, who had put his head in the oven, decided to pull it out and put in a goose.
Oh, I remember that.
And, like,
yeah.
And Mr. Burns decided to pay off the debt with the money he found in his pockets. And
no,
like,
no. Mr. Burns was Ebenezer Scrooge. And right. If I recall, Mo was George Bailey from It's a Wonderful Life.
But I mean, because it doesn't matter. The story is nothing. That's why this works, because it actually makes the story something.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, it makes the story something, which was just, I don't know. It's more touching to me now than it was back in the day. So yeah. Hooray, childhood successfully defended.
Thank you, Daniel. Matthew.
I agree with Daniel. This movie is extremely poignant, especially when you see like Scrooge as a child who his family basically abandons, or him as a young man who gets his heart broken. It's just so sad. And Michael Caine does a great job. Of all the Muppet movies we've done for Myopia, this is the best one.
Yeah. And I'll wrap it up here. I don't know how to rank it because I've seen this 1,000 times. I've seen almost all the Muppet movies a bunch. But like this one is such a good version of this. In some ways, it's better than any. Like you said, it's the best one. But it improves on it with the way that it points out, like, the fourth wall stuff is kind of necessary because it's a book that can very dryly be read in about an hour and a half, 2 hours out loud.
There's actually a good podcast out there, I think, from the New York Public Library where Neil Gaiman reads this out loud.
Oh, yeah, my dad did a porno. No.
let's not talk about that.
That's funny. But no, I don't disagree. Like, it's a book you should read because you really can just, like, in one lazy afternoon,
it's
read
a novella more than a novel. It's pretty short.
And I mean, watch the drunk history on how it came to be, because it's actually kind of an interesting story that no one wanted to publish it, so he published it on its own, and within like 3 years, it became a smash success.
Yeah.
And everyone's done it. So the reason why this one I think works is because the Muppets add a level of heart to it that just it's not easy to get. So,
yep.
It's my Christmas movie. I watch it every year. Merry Christmas to those people who are listening to it when it comes out. If you're listening to it mid-February, I guess happy Valentine's Day. But we've done a bunch of Christmas episodes. I will tweet them out. I think Scrooged is the other Christmas Scrooge movie we've done, which is also kind of fun because, frankly, they change the story, which sometimes needs to be updated. But stay tuned next week and every future week. Put another piece of your past on trial. January, Daniel, it's your month. Can you tell us what the theme of the month is?
Okay. I believe this is Disappointing Sequels Month, where there were so many classics back in the day, and in order to capitalize on them, they released sequels way too late, or they released sequels that just did not live up to the original film. So that's what we're going to be looking at. We're going to be looking at Blues Brothers 2000 is, I believe, the first one that's going to come out.
And that's my pick. And I can tell you guys, I've already tried to watch it once. I'll get through it. But God, that's a train wreck of a movie. They're zombies.
To go ahead and quote Jason Mantzoukas and June Diane Raphael, The Adventures of Scribbles Blues.
So stay tuned next week for The Adventures of Scribbles Blues. Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, guys. Thanks.
The world is at her best, you know, when people love and care. The promise of excitement.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is produced by Dude Letter Podcasting and a member of the ESO Network. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Daniel Suttis and Ann Byrne. It is produced by Daniel Suttis, Matthew Quinn, and Ann Byrne. Thomas Herman is our consultant. Nick Hoffman is our executive producer. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find it at incomtech.com. It is licensed under the Creative Commons license. Thanks.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.